Welcome to the High Performance Half Hour with me, David Osgathorpe. Each week, we meet with athletes, coaches, business owners, and entertainers to discuss the high-performing habits that have led to their individual success. On the show this week, we're looking at building resilience and coping under pressure with sports mindset coach Paul Robinson. Paul's a former professional footballer who had an incredible 22-year playing career, which started with him representing his hometown club, Watford, before moving on to West Brom, Bolton, Leeds and Birmingham City. Paul's knowledge and experience gives him a unique perspective on how athletes can cope with the pressures on and off the field, and his methods enable them to push themselves to limits they didn't know they had. So here's episode 22, Building a Sports Mindset with Paul Robinson.
Paul, welcome to the show. How are you?
Yeah, I'm all good. Thanks, David. Thank you for having me on.
Pleasure. Listen, I'm really pleased you could join us. I mean, there's a lot going on in your world at the moment, so really keen to just kind of understand where you're at. Obviously, I kind of want to talk about your career, but I'm keen to discuss your current business, Paul Robinson's Sports Mindset. Do you want to tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, so the sports science mindset stuff sort of come about really while I was not working. So we was in lockdown. I was on furlough, not really doing a lot of work, and all the ideas I'd come up with over the years of playing at an elite level, sort of I'd jotted all these notes down and was just going back over them, stuff in my head as well that had happened to me, different scenarios that you come across, obstacles that always seem to get in people's way and they don't really know how to get over them. And I sort of always found a way. So with obstacles, I love the challenge of them obstacles can always be broken. So for me, it was about, right, how's my sports mindset? What was my mindset like as a young lad growing up, then going into an elite environment? Right, how was my mindset even more focused and determined to overcome certain things? So, yeah, I just sort of sat down one day, started jotting a lot of things down, putting a website together, like, what does it look like? How can I change it? How can I help so many people? How can I help so many others? Like the transitional side of it as well. There's going to be a point in their life they're going to want to do something different. So how can I help them do that? How can I help people overcome the obstacles, like I've mentioned, throughout their career? And just like being that person, that soundboard, and treating them not like how can you put it? It's people always look at you as you're a sports person, so it's like Paul Robinson, the ex-professional football player. I look at it, no, what's the person? What's the person like? How grounded is that person? What troubles does he have that we can help him with? It's I will look at the person themselves and work through different scenarios. Just on getting to know the human being himself or herself.
That's actually a really powerful thing. I think we're quite quick to just label people, you know, and it's okay for them because, I mean, and it's really fascinating how you talk about, you know, lockdown kind of. I think a lot of people are quick to tell you how negative this kind of space is, you know, this time has been for a lot of people. I'm sure, you know, by the sounds of it, it's been a real sort of positive kind of experience for you in terms of, you know, bringing this together. But is that also come about? Have you sort of had a few conversations with ex-players, with friends and colleagues that are maybe struggling a little bit at this time as well?
Yeah, I mean, I've done a lot of networking in lockdown. And for me, I never had it, David. I had 24 years where I hadn't had a break with the family. The only time I had was 6 weeks in like the summer holidays where you get to cram in that amount of space and time with your family is just not enough. So I've loved every minute of it, being around the kids, watching them grow, watching them develop, helping my wife's business develop as well. I've loved every minute of it. But yeah, going back to the point there of what you just said, it's sorry, I'm just having a drink now. So the networking side of it was I talked to so many ex-players about how they're not in the game, how did they deal with their transitional side of it? Were they looking to go into coaching? I spoke to businesses. How do you keep your business going as strong as it is, knowing that there could be a few odd people in there that might like try and get away from that, where the route that you wanting to go? Obviously, managers as well. I've spoke to managers at football clubs. How do they keep the balance of dealing with the bigger picture, which is you might not get to see everything that goes on behind the scenes, but how do you cope with all the scenarios that will come your way being the manager of the football club? So, yeah, I've had some real interesting chats with people. And like you say, you write things down as well. And it's how can I help? How can I help you in any way possible?
Yeah. Look, I mean, I'm fascinated with this whole, we had a previous conversation around this, you know, around mindset and everything. And I think, you know, from your experience, do you think it's something that you naturally had as a player or something that you developed, you know, as an ongoing thing throughout your career?
Yeah, I naturally, you can grow into it. You can, like you say, you can be that person without even realizing it. I mean, a lot of people don't realize how strong they are. So for me, it was a progression. It was I was mentored by a great man, Graham Taylor. So I had that great mentor then from such a young age. I had Kenny Jackett, Luther Blissett, John McDermott, Jimmy Gilligan. So I had all people around me that were there for me. They were there to support me when I was going through tough times. And they were there to support me when I was going through the real good times of not getting above myself and keeping me grounded. So yeah, I picked up pieces off of them. And then the more I progressed on through my career and through life, yeah, I learned a lot off so many different people. And it's just fascinating. I love learning off people. I love speaking to different people, not people that are in the sporting world, just generally people themselves of what's it like to sort of run a business? What's it like to sort of run your life with kids as well? How do you cope with them pressures of work, life, family? There's so many obstacles out there that are a struggle for certain people, and they do struggle. Some people do struggle to deal with it, but it's like I say, it's gathering all that information, having communication about it and trying to work through it.
Yeah. Look, I think, I think you naturally had it. Obviously I've seen you play, and obviously let's talk about your career a little bit here. You made your debut at 17 years old. I mean, that just on its own is a big thing. Was that just thrown into it at that age, or do you feel you were really ready for it?
No, I felt I was ready because I had that upbringing of nothing was given to me on a plate. I had to earn the right. So everything that I was as a kid growing up, my mum and dad always challenged me to, no, you've got to earn it. If you want this or you want that, you've got to earn that. And it was no different then to when I went into football. I knew that every time I played, I had to earn the right to win the shirt. Every training session, I treated it as if it was my last one. Every game the same. So I had that mentality of this is what I decided I wanted to do, and I've got to make the most out of it to the best of my ability. So yeah, I was driven, I was committed, I was passionate about it. I loved the sport from a young age, and yeah, I just wanted to keep developing as a person and as a player, but as a person as well, because I wanted to be a respected person to well known to people of, do you know what? I really like the way he works, and I really like his attitude, and that's how I wanted to come across.
Yeah, I think that's you. I mean, you made over 750 appearances, and you played, well, obviously at Watford, West Brom, Bolton, Leeds, and Birmingham. I would say every single fan of those teams would say that you gave 100% in every single game. I mean, just the thought of that, giving that 100% level for what, 22-year career?
Yeah.
At the top, I mean, that takes a certain mentality to go out there and give it your all. I mean, yeah. did you see yourself as a leader, even, you know, from that first time you put on a shirt, or did you see it as your responsibility or is it just you? That's how you do everything. You're an all or nothing kind of guy.
Yeah, with me, you're either in or you're out. That's it with me. And I think the managers, they saw that. They saw that I wasn't technically gifted like certain players, but what I had was I had a heart, and I was prepared to go that extra mile, and I was prepared to run more than others, and I was prepared to drive people forward. And right, this is the level we need to be at. If some of you are not willing to get up to that level, then I will tell you, I will let you know my feelings, but it won't be personal, but it'll be to help you and help why you represent in this football club. So every football club I played for, you've got to understand the culture. You got to understand the history. You got to understand what the fans want, and then when you've got all them together, it works so well. You're connected. You're a well connected person, but you're also well connected with the football club, because they then understand why they signed you, and that's the reasons why. But yeah, I mean, I was just driven. I mean, I looked at it as well, David. Is a lot of people live in their comfort zones, Now, I'm the opposite. I like to live outside my comfort zone because I always like a challenge, but I also like challenging people. Some people might not like that, and that's understandable, but that was just me. I wanted to get the best out of not only myself, but others as well. I wanted to push them to realize how good they could be.
Yeah. I think that's fascinating with you saying how much you kind of wanted to know the club and you wanted to know the people and you wanted to know, you know, what it meant to things. Because I think there's a lot of people as fans that would probably watch the game and kind of think, God, he doesn't even care. He's got that shirt on. Were you ever around players like that? And that did that wind you up in that sense by seeing it?
Yeah, it wound me up, yeah. But at the same time, it also, they're not my problem. You can only control what you need to control. You can control others by giving them the right information and talking to them the right way. But if these people, if they have the mindset of all they're worried about is money, then they're not going to get very far in the game. And it shows. I mean, I've seen so many people drop out of the game because they're obsessed with money, 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 money. It's not about, right, okay, we're in a sport where people adore you. People want to respect you. So you've got to give something back. And for me, it was always about giving things back to whatever I went through throughout my career. I wanted to help others, give back to in what I was doing to make them feel comfortable as well. So yeah, I mean, some people would wind me up, but then I would think, well, I can only give you so much advice without you not wanting to listen. So I'm just going to move on to the next person that does want to listen and wants to do well.
That's fascinating what you brought up about, you know, the money. Obviously, you know, the riches at the top of any kind of professional sport are there for all to see. But I think, like, if that is your main driver, then you're probably in it for the wrong reasons. But is that something now, if you're working with young players, is that something that you're really kind of mindful of, to kind of understand their sort of deep motivation for why they want to play?
Yeah, 100%. You've got to know the person first. So you get to know the kid, you get to understand what he likes, what he doesn't like. Okay, what do you want to achieve in football? And as soon as they bring up the word money, then that's when you need to change their mind straight away, because it's going to be a total different ball game from if they get released by that club. When all they've had is thinking about the money, then they're going to be in a whole lot of a mess. Like they'll be looking at why have I been rejected? What was going wrong? And that's where you've got to have communication. You've got to explain to these kids before they even get to that point of, do you understand what football's really all about? Because it is hard work and it is mentally draining. And if you're not prepared to do all of this, then you've got no chance in football whatsoever. But any sport, any elite sport, you have to be mentally strong for it, David. You can't build yourself up from like the age of 9, 10, when you start to get them sort of, you go into them elite environments where your training goes up a level. You can't then get to 18 and think, oh no, what have I done wrong? Because you've got to be mentally prepared for it, because you'll be in for a real shock. Once the door closes in your face, it's then who's out there to help them.
Yeah, and that's something, you know, that we kind of talk about, like you only really find out about yourself in those tough times and when you've kind of had a bit of a failure or a bit of a setback.
Yeah.
And I think that's when your work kind of really, or people recognize that they really need you.
Yeah.
Yeah, in the good times, everything's great, isn't it? But we learn a lot more about ourselves when things don't go quite so well. And you know how you kind of had a pretty much sort of upwards trajectory, you know, but there was a little blip, wasn't there, where you found yourself without a career or without a club, sorry.
Yes.
And I mean, how did you look at that sort of situation at the time?
So at the time I was wondering to myself, why am I not getting an opportunity at a football club? When's the next like challenge for me gonna come about? What do I need to do better? How do I achieve getting a new club? So for me, yeah, it was about going on trials. So I went into, was it
three? How old were you at this stage, Paul?
33. So I was 33 right at the time. So I was sort of looking at it thinking, right, well, I'm getting older now. So how does my body now need to cope with the changes of the game? Because the game changes every year, with not only the physicality, but the mentality as well. So how do I need to now just keep myself ticking over, waiting for that opportunity? I need to be in the right frame of mind. I can't be negative about why I've not got a club, because at the end of the day, it's football. It's what happens. Yeah. So I need to be ready to make sure that when I do get that call, when a club does call me, I've got to be fit, and I've got to be at it straight away and go in there with no fear that I'm going to fail. So yeah, I went on trials at football clubs. I had three trials at football clubs. One was for 3 weeks, which was strange because, again, I've never done that before. I've never had that challenge of being at a club for 3 weeks, having to prove myself, and then at the end of it say that you're not going to get anything. It was a strange place to be in. And I just thought, okay, that's fine. You have your opinion. I have my opinion. No problems. I'll move on and try something different. I then went abroad. So I got a phone call to go abroad in America to have a look. It was in Canada, actually. I went to Canada to play in the MLS. I took my family out there with me again. So again, it's now I'm moving the other side of the world. I could possibly be moving the other side of the world with taking my family with me, and I'm taking my family away from the rest of the family. So when are they going to see us now? So again, you're going to come up with challenges you're the other side of the world. And when are the boys going to see their grandparents? When are they going to see like their mates that they've grown up with?
Yeah.
So you've got all that to consider. Luckily for me, it didn't work out because it wasn't right. Again, it was a great experience to go out there and be part of something that was totally different that I've never done before, to go abroad. So I came back. I still had nothing when I come home. So I was running by myself. I decided not to go on any more trials into football clubs because I didn't want to. I just felt I was wasting my time because people were looking at my age now. I found that age was becoming an issue with certain owners of football clubs were saying, he's too old, he's past it, which again, a load of rubbish. So I did some training by myself. I used to run every day. I used to do my own circuits at home, where I'd keep myself ticking over and keep my body nice and strong. And then the opportunity, in October, I think it was 2012, Birmingham called me. I went in there and started training. And then I was on month-to-month contracts for 4 months. So that kept going. So again, every month I never knew what was going to happen.
But that was more down to a financial situation on their part.
Yeah, that was financial. But again, you've got to perform at a level where the club want to keep you. You've got to make the club want to keep you around the football club. But I had the character and I had the determination to prove them people wrong. And I think that's what life's all about, is proving people wrong. Yeah. People can have their opinion. People can have their say on you. But you've got to go in there with the right mindset and the right mentality that I'm gonna prove you lot wrong. And that's what I did. I ended up signing year contracts then after that
It was 6 years you were there, wasn't it?
6 years as a player and then 2 years as a coach.
Wow. Okay, amazing. So for those chairmen that were kind of worried about, getting a couple of years out of you as a 33-year-old, I think Birmingham did pretty well out of that deal in the end of it then.
Yeah, 100%. You'd like to think so. But there's a stigma about age, and it's just a number. For me, it's just a number. It doesn't matter. Every part of your career is important to not only, okay, you're getting to that age now where the club, you're not going to play anymore, but you can bring experience to the young lads. They can watch you train and see how you've kept up to that standard throughout this for this longevity. So now these players are going to feed off what you're doing. So there's always great things there for clubs to pick up on.
Well, you obviously did look after yourself, and literally no serious injuries through the whole 22-year career, really.
Serious injuries, but there was a point where I was made to feel like I had a serious injury. Yeah, which again was another part of my life that an obstacle that was thrown my way that I would never have expected. And yeah, that was a tough part. So I was at West Brom at the time, and we lost in the playoff final to go to the Premier League, and the summer was coming and I just wanted to switch off, get away with the family, because like the seasons, they're emotional as they are, how draining they can be. My agent called me while I was away saying, you've got to go for a medical at a club that's in the Premier League. And I was like, okay, this is great, but I'm really enjoying my time at West Brom. So do I really want to go or do I really want to stay? And that was the question that I had to ask myself. A new challenge has come. Do I want to accept that challenge and go ahead? So, yeah, I decided to go and have a chat with this Premier League team. I went for my medical. I had my medical done, and it was Caroline's 30th. So we'd arranged to go to Rome for the weekend, just the two of us. I surprised her for her 30th birthday, right, was to go away just to spend some time together and switch off from the season that was just really emotional and draining. Landed in Rome. My phone rings soon as we land, soon as we get off the plane. Like, my agents left a voicemail on my phone. What's this all about? So got in the taxi, head into the hotel, speak to my agent. You need to come back. You need to fly back to Sunderland. I went, you what? You need to get on the plane and you need to fly back to Sunderland. I went, Rob, no, I'm not being funny, but I've just landed in Rome for Caroline's 30th. It's a surprise. There's no chance am I flying back. Can they delay it till Monday, Tuesday, if possible? He's like, no, there's a big problem, Paul. You need to come back. So all of these things now going through my head. Yeah. I've got to tell my wife now that I've just ruined her 30th birthday because we've got to get on a plane back to Sunderland. And I had to pay for it. I had to pay for everything.
Wow.
So the club never offered to pay for any of this. I had to fork out for the flight from Rome to Sunderland, straight in there. And then I had to fork out for the hotel we were staying in. And I had to fork out for when we'd finished with seeing the specialist that I had to go and see. I then had to fork out for the train tickets back to Birmingham to go back home. So, yeah, we flew back into Sunderland. We landed at 12 o'clock at night. My wife was crying her eyes out on the aeroplane.
Mate, I've been to Sunderland. I'd be crying if I was ended up there for my celebration birthday.
Exactly. But again, a massive club, a club that, like, you want it to go well. You want to sign for these type of clubs because of not only the fan base, but they're a massive club in the Northeast. So it was a great time for me to possibly sign for the football club. So I'd obviously had my medical. We'd flew, landed back. I had to go and see a specialist on the Saturday, and I was like, well, can you tell me why I'm going to see a specialist? And he was like, well, no, I can't just yet until we get there. So I just found it all really weird with what was going on. Yeah. No one had really told me what was going on until I got to see the specialist. So this specialist got me in the room. The physio followed me in. And he started messing around with my knee. And I went, what are you doing? He was like, well, I just need to check something. So he was testing both my knees. And he went, have you ever been out injured? And I was like, no, why? And he was, are you sure? And I went, well, if I've been out injured, I'd have a scar. Can you tell me what the problem is? Is there something wrong with my knee? And he said, well, the scans have showed up that you've got no ACL in your right knee. And this is a major ligament in your body that holds your knee together. And I was like, what are you talking about? He said, well, you've got no ACL in your right knee. And we're just wondering, like, how long have you been out with this injury? And I went, well, ACLs, you've got to have a reconstruction if you've had an ACL injury. And I've had no reconstruction. I've had no time off playing. And if you look at my playing career, then you can see that I've not missed 9 months of my career through a knee injury. So they were trying to put into my head, David, that there was something wrong with me when I knew full well there wasn't. But then in the back of my head now, you've got into my head thinking that I've got an injury. So the physio then started to tell me that, look, your knee's going to explode in about 2 years' time. And I'm like, you what? You're telling me that I've been playing for this long, I've had no problems with my knee, but you're now telling me that my knee's going to literally explode and it's going to be like a career-threatening injury that I might not ever play football again. He went, yeah. So I just went, look, I've got to go away. I'm not happy with this. So obviously West Brom had found out what was going on. They basically were trying to windle the deal down because they said that there was an issue with my right knee and that they couldn't cover it through insurance. So West Brom give me an extra week off pre-season, and they just said, look, Robbo, do what you need to do. So I went, my friend was a physio back down in London. So I did, I put myself in like a rehab type clinic where it was all power testing. So I did a test on my, right knee to see what the problems were. And it was funny, by the end of the testing, my right knee was stronger than my left knee. So there was actually no problems with it whatsoever. But these people were making out that there was something wrong. So again, now, when I go back to the mindset sort of stuff with what I'm trying to do is that people were trying to get into my head to make me feel like there was something wrong with me when I knew there wasn't, but yet they made me
so many issues with this, isn't there? Whether it's on your level with how you then manage it, you kind of look at, you know, if that was a younger, less resilient player, that could have completely broken them.
Yeah.
on there. You don't know if that is, you know, the club, like you said, playing, you know, mind games with trying to, you know, drive your price down, creating a problem that isn't there. But, you know, it's definitely a less resilient player would have, you know, not been able to manage that particularly well.
Not at all. And that's the worst thing about it, is that these people work in an elite environment, and the way they talk to people is, in my eyes, is shocking. You shouldn't be talking to professional athletes, and it might, like you say, it could be any sport where an athlete might have a problem, but yet it's not a bad one, but it's made out to feel like a bad one. And that person, the way they speak to them, has got to remember with what they're saying to it, they need to make the person feel comfortable and knowing full well what the extent of their injury is, and not feel like, hold on a minute, my life could change here with what you've just said to me. And that's why I sort of work around them sort of scenarios of trying to make them feel that there's always another goal, there's always another challenge that you can do, or there's always a mindset that you can work on to try and get yourself back around to the way that you're thinking and not the way that they're thinking.
Yeah, I mean, it's unbelievable when you hear that kind of stuff, you know. And I think it's fair play to you for, you know, just moving on from that and then, you know, still being able to perform in the way that you were. I mean, you've sort of had some good, strong characters around you, whether it's players, but you played under some really good managers as well. I mean, is there one or two that have kind of, you know, really helped with you, you know, how you deal with things in that respect? So, you know, people that have had that, made that mark on your career?
Yeah, so obviously Graham Taylor was a massive one for me growing up. He sort of instilled into me to have that respect, to be myself. Don't be anyone different, no matter what you do later on in your life. He used to say to me, Paul, no matter what you do later on in your life, just be yourself. Be yourself and act the way that you will always act, and that's respectful to others as well as your own family and your own friends. So that was great advice from a young kid growing up. Obviously, I then went on and played under managers like Tony Mowbray, who was, when I was going through that time of my knee, he was very supportive. We were in constant dialogue and communication about what was happening and how I was feeling. So that was great for me. And then my time at Birmingham working under Gary Rowett, again, he was similar to me. He was on my levels of mindset, and he was on the levels of, he played the game, so he understood. But he also knew that I was coming to a certain age, and he wanted me to sort of expand my knowledge a little bit more, which would eventually go down the coaching side. So, yeah, he was always giving me advice on what to do the next step. Once I was getting close to retiring, look, he kept going, Paul, look, this is what I think you should do, because you will help so many others.
Do you know, it's really interesting what you've kind of brought up there. It's like you talk about managers, and players will often come out with, you know, how good they were tactically, or where they were a winner, or what their career. All you've kind of talked about there is how good they were as people, yeah, and how they taught, you know, how they treated you as just a person, and that personable touch. And I think, am I right in sort of saying that that's just the angle that you really want to take, because you maybe feel it's lacking a little bit at the moment in the game, is like just dealing with individuals and their individual needs rather than kind of treating them like robots or pieces of meat?
100%. That's the outtake that I had growing up as a kid and throughout my career, is that people treated me as a human being, just me as a person with what I wanted. The ones who wanted to treat me differently, I had no time for. I'd switch off from what they were trying to tell me or what they were trying to do to me. They were the people that I always wanted to prove wrong. And that's why now this is what I'm wanting to do. So my Paul Robinson sports mindset is all about, how do you overcome them obstacles? You speak to them as people, you treat them as human beings, and you get down to the roots of what's going on. How can we make it better? How can we move forward? So it's always just that communication. You've got to communicate to these people properly.
Yeah, I mean, you've obviously had a little bit of experience in academies, and I mean, there's a lot out at the moment, actually. I've been reading quite a few bits about people kind of even question as to whether academies sort of work, given the number of kids that go into that machine and the lack of players that kind of come out of it. I mean, do you think... You know, I know, obviously, I don't want to, you know, get you sort of blurring any lines with you kind of working in that sort of area. But do you think it needs a little bit of a shake up at the moment?
Yeah, it needs changing. There's too much. They're in too much. They do too much. It needs to be tapered to a certain amount of time. I get to when you get to 16, 18, you're in the system then, because that's what you want to be. You want to be now, like, I've earned the contract to a scholarship, so now I'm on the pathway of becoming maybe a professional football player. Mm. In that time, you're doing educational programs, which is great as well. But when you're a kid, from the ages of, what, it's seven now it is, I think the research is like seven. Some clubs do it younger, I mean, which is shocking. Let the kids be kids. They need to have fun between them ages and 15, because that's the best times of their lives, is having fun as a kid. Why do I want a kid in an academy 4 or 5 times a week? The parents as well. You've got to think of the parents have got jobs. They've then got to get in their cars. They've got to take the kids to where they need to be. They've got to take them to games at the weekend. There's no switching off. There's no time to rest, or there's no time to just be a kid and enjoy your life. So for me, it needs to change. It definitely needs to change with younger ages. And I had the best of both worlds, because I got to the chance to play not only in the academy, but grassroots football. So I had my time with my mates in the academy, but I had also great times with my mates at my Saturday and Sunday league teams, which was brilliant.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that isn't allowed much these days, then, is it? Yeah,
no,
if you're in the academy.
If you sign, if you sign from the age of 8 in an academy, that's it. You can't play for your Sunday league team. Well, you can play. Yeah, you can't play for your Sunday league team. They've stopped it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just, you're missing out on. And if you don't make it, and the chances are you probably won't, is that you've missed out on a big part of your childhood there, haven't you?
Burnout. For me, it's, you're burning out. The kids get bored. They get bored of being in the system for so long. And they've not been given the license to enjoy themselves as kids.
So do you see that a lot? Maybe it's not just a case of like the academy's not working, but like you said, the kids maybe being bored of it. And, you know, I think like you've kind of talked about before, it's like, you know, if things don't quite go so well, if you're not really feeling it, if you're a little bit bored, is it just easier to kind of walk away rather than dig in to something that you've maybe lost a little bit of love for it?
Yeah, well, that's all it is they've lost the love for it, because they've been in continuously day after day. They've been on this program from such a young age, and they gradually got bored. They've lost love for football because they didn't realize it was going to be like that. They then probably, like you say, the rejection has hit them harder. They've been shown the door by saying, unfortunately, you've not made the grade and we're not going to take you on. Okay, then what are these clubs now doing for this kid? Are they helping these kids to get another football club? Are they helping them to get education? Are they helping them to get jobs? What are they doing for them? No one really knows, because as we've seen recently, there's been kids who've committed suicide because they've been rejected from their football clubs because the pressure's got to them so much, because they had in their head, they had professional football player all of their lives. To then be told that they're not getting a professional contract at that football club is devastation for them.
I think that is exactly the problem. They're kind of sold this dream at such a young age. I think it's, you know, of like 80 kids across all age groups in an academy, I think it's something like one or two of them might make it professional. I mean, it's like, it's so, you know, it's like a lottery really, isn't it? You know,
and and they've been given, like, they've been promised from such a young age as well, David. They've been promised the world. Do you know what I mean? At these clubs, they pamper them. They give them everything. They give them boot deals. No, you need to stop doing that. These kids need to earn the right. So they need to find out the hard way of what it's like. Don't give them boot deals. Go and buy some. Get your mum and dad. Your mum and dad work. Your mum and dad buy your boots like my mum and dad did for me. They always bought my boots for me. Life skills. What do we teach these kids in academies? Life skills. What do they clean the professional players? Do they have a relationship with a senior pro by cleaning his boots? Do they have a connection with them? No, they don't, because now they have different. Their academies are miles away from the first team. So where's that balance that you're finding?
Yeah, I kind of like that expression. It was better when it was worse. You know, I think there's a lot to be taken from. You know, I mean, I guess, you know, where it's inevitable that things change. You know, they can't sort of always stay the same. But there's a lot there, you know, back in the day that was better, and where people just had to, like you said, you had to earn it, you had to work your way up, and you felt like you were part of something as well, you know, and you kind of had that goal to kind of work towards. I mean, can you see that it changing, that it kind of going back, you know, to a way that's more supportive of those youngsters?
Well, yeah, Only if you get ex-players in and around the building. So if you get players that have played for the football club that have played over the years, the kids get that inspiration off them. They get also to talk to them about their experiences. So these people are passing on their experiences of what it was like coming through an academy. So there's an understanding. The parents understand this is what it was like for us growing up. Now you're having to go through twice as much stuff to what we were dealing with. So how do you cope? So then now you're having a relationship with the parents because you're trying to get them to understand what it was like for you as a kid growing up coming through. So I think football clubs need to get more ex-professional players in and around it just so they understand what's going on. And it helps, and it will help the, it will also help the kid themselves have a better career maybe because, hold on a minute, well, he's told me that, but you're telling me this and I'm not quite getting it now, whereas leave it to the senior pros or the ex-professionals to tell them the advice and pass them on of what it's like. And then, you know, and then this kid understands then where he needs to get to and what he needs to do to achieve that goal.
I'm a big believer that actually, you know, what you're saying there, I think sometimes when you're in a club, you know, whether you're, you know, like the coaches are just doing what the manager has told them to, you know, even like the current players are still doing because they're employees of the club. I think bringing in like someone external where, you know, they're not trying to, they haven't got to say something to keep other people happy. They're saying things from their own experiences. I think it's so much more powerful, but I think people are scared to do that. You know, I think
They're threatened. They're threatened by it. Yes. These companies are threatened by it because they don't want someone from the outside coming in and doing this. That's what it is that they're worried. But hold on a minute, what do you want for the club? That's the question you ask the owners. And where do you want the club to go? How do you want this club to keep moving forward? Because it's not working with what you're doing. But yet now I've come in and I've started doing this, but you're not liking it because it's something different. And people are relaying to it now because not only one am I passing on my experiences, but actually I'm communicating to the players because that's what the players need. They need that communication. They need that little bit of an arm around them every now and then, but they also need to be told what's right and what's wrong.
Definitely. And, you know, you've kind of mentioned this to me before about sort of building resilience with these kids, you know, is this just a case of like telling them not to be scared and making those mistakes and kind of, you know, working out and learning from them? Or, you know, how would you kind of want to work with someone in that capacity?
Everyone makes mistakes, David. It's how do you cope with the mistakes? Are you going to constantly keep repeating again and again and again, which you see? A lot of times is that once someone's made a mistake, it's got into their head and then they're making another mistake. Then they're making another mistake. Well, then that player's or that person in a professional environment, then they're not focused on what they need to do right. So it's about encouraging. If you make a mistake, not a problem. Everyone makes mistakes. It's about how do you move on from that mistake now? So that could be like a 5-yard pass to another player just to get their confidence growing again. And then they can hit that extra long pass. It might not come off, but do you know what? I had a go and I never let it affect me before. So now I'm going in the right direction because I've made a mistake and it hasn't affected me because now I'm trying it again and again and again. But you can see the confidence and that pass. Once they start hitting that pass, it then becomes a great ball and it's turned out, right, okay, that definitely hasn't affected me now. And I've found the target of where I needed to go. So it's repetition. It's just working. It's practice. Again, in training, you're always practicing. You're always working on your game to be better all the time. And again, you're going to make mistakes in a training session. It'd be no different to a game, but it's just constantly keep practicing and practicing until you get it right.
Yeah. Well, with that in mind, I kind of want to touch on something because, like, you know, we talked about you not having any injuries yourself, but you were a kind of no holes barred kind of player and you maybe caused one or two sort of injuries to others. I mean, how did you deal, you know, one with that? You've kind of injured someone on the pitch, but probably more so the abuse that kind of followed with that.
Yeah, I mean, you got to have thick skin. Obviously, it's horrible when you injure someone. It's the worst feeling ever that you've actually hurt an opposing player, and in your head straight away, I had no intentions of doing that. There was no malice towards that person, but then obviously the media blow it all up, the opposition team blow it all up to making out that you're that type of person when you know you're not. So yeah, for me, you've got to have a thick skin. You've got to be able to deal with not only the pressures that are on the football pitch, but the pressures that come without, as like from the outside as well. Fans, opposition managers, supporters, social media. Again, social media is the biggest problem now for me, is that there's just so much stuff on there that needs to be stopped.
Everyone's got an opinion.
Why people are not getting blocked. I mean, I just used to block all the negativity. To me, I used to always try and keep a positive outlet on everything. I know that you're going to get people out there who want to tarnish you and want to put you down, but it's part of life. It's what's going to happen, but you've got to accept it, and you've got to try and move on as quick as you can and deal with it.
I think it's kind of quite funny. There was a probably the most high profile one. Was it around about 2006 where you sort of broke someone's jaw?
Yes.
Was that playing for West Brom against Birmingham?
Yeah,
and then you end up playing for Birmingham.
Yeah.
I mean, if that's like no way of like, you know, confronting it full on. I mean, what was that initially like when you put that Birmingham shirt on, and were you kind of expecting a little bit of abuse for the, you know, there's obviously a big rivalry there just with you coming from West Brom.
Yeah, I mean,
alone what happened.
Yeah, there was a big thing made of it in the papers when I first signed for Birmingham. Mm. And again, there's no hiding place. So for me, it was, I accept what I did was totally accidental, and there was no malice in it. Unfortunately, the player got injured, and I just didn't want that to happen. So I had to accept my punishment. I had to move on quickly. Yes, my family got abused from fans, kids at schools, like saying things to my kids, and the press blowing it up. There was always different scenarios that would come at me from that incident from Birmingham. But I knew as soon as I signed for Birmingham, it was a great club, and I wanted to make it great again. So for me now, I'm a Birmingham City player. I had to win them fans over about what I was all about as a character, and how was I going to conduct myself playing for Birmingham City Football Club. And that was to give my all, not only on the pitch, but off it, towards the fans, to help people around the area. That was me. That's what I did at every football club. So I had the extra pressure of winning a lot of people over.
Yeah, but it sounds like you really thrive on that. I think that's a difficult one to actually teach.
It is difficult to teach because it's got to come from within. I mean, that's just my drive and passion though, David. It's what I've wanted to do since I was a kid, and I wasn't going to let anyone else stop me from doing it. The only one that was going to fail would have been me, myself, in letting myself down. I couldn't blame anyone else. I could only look at myself if I didn't achieve what I had achieved.
Brilliant. Well, look, man, you're kind of making this step into this next career. What's the thoughts now going forwards?
So I still love my coaching. I want to get back out there now. Now I'm recharged. I've had that lovely break with my family. Thankfully, now they're going back to school, which is great. They're all open. So, for me now, the next step is looking for jobs, seeing what's out there, seeing what next exciting challenge is there for me to go and take with both hands. But again, obviously, I've got to respect that the people that want to hire me have got to do it for the right reasons as well. So, yeah, it's a tough world we live in, and there's no easy jobs out there. But no, I'm again. Like I was as a player, I'm going to try and get back into the game as much as I can.
Oh, look, I think just given what we've talked about today, I think there's a huge amount that you've got to offer there. And I'm sure, you know, clubs and individual athletes would you know, really kind of benefit from working with you for your personal experience and with your outlook on life. I'm sure it's going to work out for you, buddy.
Yeah, no, I hope so, David. Yeah, I'm a very positive guy. I have a visualization board that I look at every day with everything that I've written down on there that, again, keeps me motivated. It keeps me positive. That's my driving force, is to never give up. And that's what it is in life, is to never give up, and always, whatever dream there is for people out there, or whatever goal that they want to achieve, then keep driving for it. Don't just give up because there's an obstacle in the way.
Listen, give me one more thing. I'm really fascinated by that, the vision board and that. Is there one more kind of tip that you could maybe give to people as a sort of motivational tool that's worked for you, or something that you suggest with people that you work with?
Yeah, so my visualization board is a key one for me. It's it's writing notes down. I always say to people, make sure you're writing notes down. Jot down training sessions, what you've experienced in the day. Has it been a positive day? Has it been a negative day? Just so you can go back and look on these things to how you can make it different within yourself. So the visualization boards for me is massive. I've got three clarity words. So I've used positive, grateful, and visualization. So them three words for me are, they're part of my life, and they're what I'll look at every day and think, right, well, how can I be positive? Well, that's to encourage, have energy, like have a positive energy, have a positive mindset, be happy, inspire people. So when they call you, how can I inspire them? By being positive on the end of the line. Grateful again is, I'm grateful for my family that are around me, the support they give me, the commitment that they're healthy. We have a happiness, unconditional love. And then the visualize for me, I go into a room 10, 15 minutes. And again, this anyone could do this. And I suggest, because it makes you feel so good, is go into a dark room. You can have some earphones in, play some music, 10, 15 minutes, and just visualize what goals you want. How do you, as a person, how do you want to develop? How do you want to move forward? So what do you see that could be out there for you in the future? It's like, what jobs do you want to go for? Right, visualize on that job. Believe that you can get it. They're the big things for me. So them three words, yeah, I look at every day, David, them with them three.
I love that, man. I'm going to steal that.
And I've got a picture as well. So for when you're listening as well, the people that are listening, is add pictures to it. So add pictures of people that mean something to you. I've also put some quotes in there as well. So I put like some speech bubbles around saying, always believe in yourself. Start each day with a positive thought and a grateful heart. Visualize the things that you want. See it, feel it, and believe in it. Visualize your success, then take action, because you're the only one that can take action. You can visualize all these things. No one else can do that for you. You then have got to take the action in, right, I believe that I can do this. Go for it. Don't hold back. And if it wasn't meant to be, it wasn't meant to be. Move on to the next one.
Wow, man, this is brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. Look, I want to kind of explore this again if we can, because I've just literally written down about 20 questions in on here while we've kind of gone through. If you're open to doing another one, mate, that would be really, really good.
Yeah, no problems.
Yeah.
Like you say, if you get feedback from people as well, David, listening to it, and they want to throw in some questions, then yeah, great.
Yeah.
I love all that. I like answering people's questions and giving them an honest answer.
We'll definitely do that. That sounds fantastic. Listen, Paul, thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
No worries, David. Thanks for having me on.
All right. All the best. Pleasure. Take care.
Cheers. Thank you.